Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 4K podcast. This week's topic, we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts about self-correction, voluntary compliance programs. Certainly a favorite subject of mine. But of course, first things first, let's talk about the events that we got coming up. That 4K virtual bunch, it's going to be on Thursday, September 24th, 4 p.m. Eastern, with Ron Sellers. Ron Sellers is a broker from the Sellers Benefits Group in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. He is somebody I've worked with over the years, still work with today, and Ron certainly has an interesting story because if you look at Ron's career, Ron is a Florida State football legend. He was a first-round draft pick of the, I think at the time, might have been still the Boston Patriots. Also played with the Dolphins and Cowboys, and he has a Super Bowl ring, so we can certainly talk about his experience in professional football, his segue into being a broker, and his involvement in the retirement plan business. So that should be a lot of fun. On September 25th at 12 p.m. noon Eastern, I think that's kind of redundant, 12 p.m. noon, but whatever. We're going to have that 4K virtual conference 6, 2-hour event. Great content. Lyle Himbaugh from Granite Group will be there. We'll have some other people as well. So that should be a lot of fun as well. And then October 23rd, we have another one, that 401k virtual conference number 7. And of course, in the interim, we'll have more of these virtual bunches every 2 weeks, just booking guests. And once we book the guests, we'll let people know. Should be a lot of fun. I actually really like those virtual bunches. You get to talk to people about, you know, certain things that, you know, outside of the retirement plan business, learn about people's careers and their interests and, you know, kind of what makes them tick. A lot different than, you know, some of the, obviously different from a presentation at the virtual conference. And of course, last but not least, January 21-22, 2021, that 401k National Virtual Conference, 2-day event. I think we're going to start around 10 or 11 because we'll have people on the West Coast. Can't start at 9 o'clock. Nobody's going to get up at 6 a.m. for any type of conference out West. Can't blame them. Signing up, a lot of presenters, Pension Assurance signed up. We'll have some more announcements. Walt Frazier is our guest on day one. Day two event. Well, day two we'll book a guest certainly as we get closer and closer to January. Go to that 401ksite.com for further information on all events and, of course, signing up for that 401k National Virtual Conference, where the early bird special to sign up is still $20.21. So, let's get right to it. Voluntary compliance, self-correction. I have to say that right now in my career, a good chunk of the business these days is voluntary correction programs. Back in the day when I first started, in the IRS, I don't know the time frame, but it seemed like at the time the IRS finally opened up a self-correction program. The EPCRS, a voluntary correction program. I'm sure it predates my time in ERISA, which is 1998. But from my experience, VCP programs, they were few and far between. And mostly, they had to deal with misamenders, where, you know, a plain document should have been drafted and wasn't. And it was problematic in those days trying to find a pre-TRA6 document for some of these plans that missed it. But over the years, the IRS and Department of Labor, through technology and through its vigorous interest in plan sponsors complying with the Internal Revenue Code and ERISA, have greatly expanded these programs. The voluntary correction programs as well as self-correction programs. I think they're great. Plan sponsors, when they hear it, don't like the idea that, you know, especially on the IRS side, they have to fork over money to fix problems, or even on the 5500 issue, when you have missed 5500s and the Department of Labor's delinquent filing voluntary correction program. They don't want to fork over money, and they don't realize that these correction programs are like manna from heaven. You know, the story in the Bible, story of Exodus, Israelites were hungry, and just there was this manna coming directly from heaven. And I think that that's how I see these correction programs, because it allows plan sponsors pay a, you know, on the IRS side, pay a few thousand dollars, pay another few thousand dollars in legal fees, and fix problems ahead of time and avoid what I call the audit game. Now, the audit game is the idea where the plan sponsor discovers compliance errors, or their TPA discovers compliance errors and lets the plan sponsor knows, and the plan sponsor wants to play the audit game. The audit game means that since the statute of limitations on a Form 5500 is 3 years, the plan sponsor would gamble that the IRS or the DOL wasn't going to audit the plan, so they don't have to make any of the corrections, such as corrective contributions, or whatever other change there may be. The problem with the audit game, it's really a bad bet. Don't bet against the house, as they say. And the house is the IRS and the DOL. First of all, some faulty errors don't have a statute of limitations. You have a 5500, or you have a missing amendment or restatement, there is no statute of limitations. I've had situations in the past where you're on an audit, and all of a sudden they're missing a document from 6 or 7 years ago. There's no statute of limitations when it comes to missing plain documents on a 401k plan or whatever type of plan you're dealing with. Same thing with a failure to file a Form 5500. You don't file it. The statute of limitation is unlimited. They can go back and hammer you for a 5500 that you didn't file 5, 10 years ago. And second, I don't like to gamble. I'm not good at poker. I don't like to gamble because I don't like to lose. Last couple times I was in Vegas, both times for 401k events, and hopefully one day we can do that Vegas event, but I don't like to bet because I don't like to lose, and I'm not willing to bet the qualification retirement plan against, you know, the house, the dealer, which is the DOL and the IRS. Correcting compliance errors through self-correction and voluntary compliance programs is far less expensive than fixing it under an audit, because correcting it yourself on your time instead of the auditor's time will save you money and penalties. So, you know, ultimately, you know, this is the way to go. It's so cost-effective and just, you know, really good to fix it and just deal with it. One great aspect of the voluntary, well, the whole EPCRS, the employee correction system and whatnot, actually, I'm sorry, it's the Employee Plans Compliance Resolution Program. That's great. I never know these acronyms. I know what the acronyms are, but I don't know if they actually stand for sometimes. But anyway, the IRS has developed a framework of voluntary correction by plan sponsors under this umbrella called EPCRS, and one of the big parts of the umbrella is the SCP, which is a self-correction program. And over the years, they've expanded it. The beauty is that it allows the plan sponsors to correct many plan errors and not having to deal with, you know, submitting the plan to the IRS and paying the compliance fee and all that kind of stuff. So under the SCP, the plan sponsor can self-correct an insignificant operational error at any time to preserve the tax qualification of their plan. You know, an operational error occurs when, you know, the plan sponsor doesn't follow the written terms of the plan. Even when it's significant, they may be able to self-correct. It really, you know, as long as it's done in a timely manner, as long as it doesn't affect that many participants and it's nominal, it's not significant. And that's a weighing circumstance. You know, again, people come to me with errors, and it's always a question whether they could self-correct or not. You know, if it's within one plan year and it's just dealing with a handful of plan participants, that's the way to go. And many years ago, when I was at that law firm that I, you know, always joke about, Myers-Swaz, English & Klein, I was presented with a client of theirs. One of the few times I was recommended, I don't think it was a client of theirs. But anyways, I was recommended by another attorney in the firm to take a look at a plan, and, you know, the significant part of the problem was is that this was a publicly traded bank, and for 20 years, their auditors incorrectly defined compensation as excluding bonuses when the plan document clearly included bonuses. And so they had to make corrective contributions, both missed deferrals and employer contributions on that bonus for a handful of employees over a 20-year period. Now, I said, listen, you're going back so long, There's no way you can do this on the self-correction program. The parameters of the self-correction program is predicated on the fact that you caught these errors pretty quickly. It doesn't affect a whole bunch of people. It's an insignificant amount of money. You know, I weigh it and I say, you know what, you got to go to the VCP. And of course, they didn't like that answer, and they hired an attorney that was going to do the SCP. And at the end of the day, I want to sleep at night. I don't want to have my plan sponsors, clients get in trouble for correcting an error. And then years later, you know, on an audit, the IRS said, you know what, you were not in bounds for the SCP program. You should have filed in the VCP and get an IRS approval. You know, that's just my two cents. If it's insignificant and, you know, you correct it really quickly, I'm fine with that. I understand people don't want to pay the, you know, $3,500 or the $3,000 for the VCP program. But they're obviously in certain situations where you just cannot use the SCP program because it's not designed for significant plan problems. So, you know, example, I had a client a couple years ago was using one of the payroll providers as their TPA. TPA butchered the ADP and ACP test, and it was discovered many years later when there was a change to a new TPA, and they were just out of bounds for the SCP program because it went back so many years. They were out of luck with refunds. They had to make QNECs. It was a $70,000 QNEC for covering 2 to 3 plan years, so it was a hot mess, as they would say. That was a situation where SCP could not and should not have been an option, and it wasn't, and we corrected it through the IRS and VCP, which brings us to the VCP program. The Voluntary Correction Program, when there's significant, you know, issues and costs dealing with corrections, the IRS has a voluntary correction program where you go and correct these errors and you seek IRS approval, and the IRS promises not to bother you about it. You know, the reason that you apply to the VCP and not the SCP is because there are many reasons why you can't self-correct without IRS approval. A huge example is, again, missing plan documents. The VCP program allows you to, for example, if you had an extra document that you were supposed to do by 2003, and you didn't do it, and it's 2020. Well, you can't use the SCP program to do that. You just really you just don't have that option. That's why we have the VCP program. You know, it's for significant errors, and there's certain situations where the plan sponsor, while they may have something that they could certainly qualify and fix through the SCP program, they may want to apply for the VCP program just because they want the blessing of the IRS. And that's fine. And, you know, as long as it's not, the costs are not significant, getting IRS's blessing is certainly, certainly a great idea. But again, based on the cost of voluntary compliance programs, the IRS fee, the $25, $3, $3,500, whatever it is, and the legal expense, and, you know, my fees, I charge on a flat fee for these things, they are, you know, I'm not going to say these are not significant amounts of money. They are. Thousands and thousands of dollars are significant, in my opinion. But when you look at the fees that you can pay through the VCP program and the penalties that the IRS and or the Department of Labor can levy during an audit when it's caught on the audit and the audit cap program, as they say, tremendous savings, just tremendous savings. You know, I was dealing with a client many years ago, had a problem with their matching documents and the matching contribution amendment and whatnot, and there were some serious issues with the IRS and a $40,000 penalty that was levied against them. Okay. Next on my list, the Voluntary Fiduciary Compliance Program. Now we're headed towards the Department of Labor's realm of the world. Previously, the Department of Labor did not have voluntary compliance programs, but now they do. They have a program dealing with fiduciary breaches. You apply to your, you know, plan sponsor would apply to their local EBSA office, the Employee Benefits Security Administration. So for my New York clients, we got to make a submission to the Whitehall Street address downtown, not that far from Staten Island Ferry. Very, very downtown, south of Wall Street. I know that place, unfortunately, very well with dealing with clients who had depositions over there. That's not a lot of fun. But the Department of Labor has a VFCP program. And, you know, it's a program for relief from enforcement actions in the DOL. The most popular use these days for the DFVCP, for the VFCP program. And that is dealing with late posits of salary deferral contributions. So when I'm dealing with clients and they have, I certainly, have issues with clients with late deferrals. And the problem with late deferrals is that my opinion is that most plans that do this incorrectly never do it once. They always do it multiple times. And it's a pain in the rear end when it's multiple contributions, and multiple years, and it's a hot mess. And of course, other fiduciary breaches deal with, different transactions, loans and transactions to parties in interest, improper plan expenses, payment of unnecessary compensation, all that kind of stuff. It's a great program to have. There is no cost. Again, 95% of it I've dealt with late deferral deposits. Certainly not significant fiduciary breaches such as, loans from the plan or, some fiduciaries taking advantage of plan assets for their own betterment. I've never had to deal with that, luckily. So again, there's no cost to file, so there's obviously no excuse not to. One of the big problems of the voluntary fiduciary compliance program that I've seen in the past is that you will have a lot of plan sponsors who think that with late deferrals they could correct it on their own, that it's like a self-correction. And the problem is that it's a question on the Form 5500 where you have late deferrals. You answer yes, it subjects you to a possible audit. Or later, I've had clients who say, yes, I've had late deferrals, not apply to the VFCP. And then the Department of Labor sends a letter back and says, oh, by the way, we don't have a copy of your application. We suggest that you complete it. So when you get a letter like that, I always advise the clients ahead of time, don't let the Department of Labor let you know about this program. Do it ahead of time. Do it, contemporaneously, and avoid the letter a year or two later that just may target you for a DOL audit. Last but not least, the Delinquent Filer Voluntary Compliance Program. That's another thing through the DOL. Separate, it's the DFVCP, and sometimes I switch those acronyms. That's what happens when you're getting there up in age. But anyway, the DFVCP program is under the domain of the Department of Labor, dealing with missing 5500s. This is the most cost-effective program out there, and the reason why is the Department of Labor has got this penalty now, just alone, $2,194 a day for a late 5500. No, it's no longer $50 a day. The DOL's DFEC program will obviously let the plan sponsors fix late and miss 5500s. I think the maximum penalty for a single plan, for a small plan, is like $750 and $2,000 for a larger plan. If there are multiple late forms, they have a deal for you, kind of like Monty Hall. I think the per plan cap is $1,500 or $4,000 for a larger plan. So if you got multiple years, pay one price. It's kind of like I just was looking at Adventureland, which is an amusement park by me. My kids used to go there in the days before Disney World when they were a lot younger and they can only deal with tamer rides. They had a little bracelet called POP, pay one price. Instead of paying multiple tickets, you pay one price and you go on all the rides. And luckily, the Department of Labor has that as well. So if a plan sponsor is missing multiple years of 5500s, and I've had that situation 2-3 years. I just had a call with a client. Handling them through a plan audit, I'm not handling their DB problem, but accordingly, their DB has multiple years of missing 5500s. They want to apply through the DFVCP program, and I told them, because your 401k plan is under audit, I think that you should file under the DFVCP as soon as possible. You know, it's again, this pay one price, it's a great idea, as long as when you file the 5500, the plan sponsor checks it, that it's through the DFVCP program, because I've had situations where they, you know, intended to file through the DFVCP. They did it, and then they did not check the box. The TPA didn't check the box that it was a DFVCP program filing, and things got screwed up, and plan sponsor was, you know, socked with a penalty. So I think that that is just, you know, absolutely one of the greatest things, because, you know, late 5500s is certainly a huge issue. And I think what people forget is late 5500s or missing 5500s could also deal with a plan that actually did file a 5500. How does that happen? It happens when a plan sponsor requires a plan audit and they don't file their 5500 with the audit because either they forgot about it, or they could get their audit in time, or they didn't know they had a requirement for a plan audit. And I've seen that happen from time to time. So it's a huge problem, because when you file 5500 without the requisite audit, it's not considered a proper 5500 filing, because again, large plans have to have that audit, and so it technically does not qualify as a filing. And that's a huge problem when you file, plan sponsor files, thinks they filed, they didn't file the audit, and that became a problem. And I had a situation once with a plan sponsor where they filed the wrong audit. I think the auditor gave them the wrong PDF, and it was somebody else's audit. And that was a problem. And they got the 45-day letter, which they corrected. But, you know, the problem with the 45-day letter, you wait some longer, and certainly you can certainly get, you know, penalized. And, you know, who the heck needs that kind of problems? But just realize that the self-correction voluntary compliance programs certainly go a long way to helping a plan sponsor out, and they certainly should be utilized and pushed and whatnot. So I hope you enjoy this episode of that 401k podcast. Hope you attend some of the virtual events coming up. Go to that 401k site.com for further information, and I hope you hear from me again next week. Take care. Bye.